Chapter 1. Recalled to Life. It was the best of times, it was the worst of times. It was the age of wisdom, it was the age of stupidity. It was the season of light, it was the season of darkness. It was the spring of hope, it was the winter of despair. We had everything to look forward to, we had nothing to look forward to. We were all going directly to heaven. We were all going directly the other way. In short, it was a time much like today. A king with a large chin and a queen with a plain face ruled England. A king with a large chin and a queen with a pretty face ruled France. Nothing had changed, and nothing would change. Things would be this way forever. King George III of England and his queen, Charlotte Sophia, were sure of that. King Louis XIV and his queen, Marie Antoinette, were sure of that too. It was the year 1775. Times were hard, and the people were quietly angry. Poor people had nothing and were nothing. Rich people had everything and were everything. There was justice, but justice was cruel. In France, the people were afraid. Even less serious crimes were punished with terrible punishments. In England, the people were afraid too. Robbery and murder were common, so no one felt there was justice. The punishments didn't seem to match the crimes. The courts didn't seem to be able to tell the difference between a thief and a murderer. Our story starts in England, on a dark, rainy Friday night in late November, as the mail coach was making its way to the port of Dover. It was cold and wet. The road was muddy, and the horses were tired. The coach was getting heavier and heavier with the mud, and now the hill was too much for them. The driver was nervous, and so were the passengers. Robberies were common, and the Dover Road was a favourite place for robbers to wait. The three passengers had no choice. They got out and began to walk up the hill in the mist and the rain beside the coach. The mail guard looked down at his gun to check it was there.
"Listen, Joe, can you hear that?" called the driver.
"I can't hear anything, Tom."
"It's a horse, I'm sure it is. Get your gun and look out."
The driver stopped the coach, and the guard picked up his gun and listened. Yes, there it was. He could hear the sound of a horse in the distance, and it was getting closer.
"Stop! Who's there? Stop or I'll shoot!"
"I'm looking for a passenger," said a voice from the mist.
"What passenger?"
"Mr. Jarvis Lorry."
"That's me," said one of the passengers. "Is that you, Jerry? What's the matter?"
"I've got a message from Tellson's Bank for you."
"Come forward then," said the guard, with his finger on his gun. "But keep your hands where I can see them."
The passengers hid their watches and valuable things deep inside their coats. The horse and rider came out of the mist. Both were covered from head to foot in mud. The rider got off and handed Mr. Lorry a piece of paper. Mr. Lorry thanked him and read, "Wait at Dover for the young lady."
"Well, Jerry, tell them that my answer is recalled to life."
"That's a very strange answer, sir."
"Maybe it is. But when they hear that, they'll know that the answer is from me, and from no one else. Good night."
The coach slowly moved on again, and Jerry watched until it disappeared in the mist.
"Recall to life? What kind of answer is that? Very strange. Very strange. No, Jerry, he can't know. But that wouldn't suit my sort of work," he said to himself.
Meanwhile, the coach moved on,
and Mr. Lorry became lost in his dreams. He was on his way to dig someone out of a grave. But which of the ghostly faces that he saw in his dreams was the face of the buried person? Proud, sad, angry faces, but always the face of a man of about 45. Tired, pale and thin, and with every hair on his head completely white. Buried? How long? Mr. Lorry repeatedly asked this ghost. The answer was always the same. 18 years. 18 years. Shall I bring her to you? Asked Mr. Lorry. Here the answers were often different. Sometimes his ghost was crying, "No, it's too soon!" Sometimes impatient, "Take me to her!" Or sometimes confused, "I don't know her. I don't understand." And when the imaginary conversation finished, Mr. Lorry would start to dig, dig and dig. The words, 18 years, were still in his ears when he woke up. However, the shadows of the ghostly face faded away with the rising sun. The mail coach finally arrived in Dover and stopped at the George Hotel. By this time, there was only one remaining passenger, and he was wrapped up from head to toe to keep warm. He was shown to his room, and the staff eagerly waited for him to reappear, to see what their new guest looked like. He washed and changed and went down to breakfast. Mr. Lorry was about 60 years old. He was dressed in a formal brown suit that was a little worn, but very well kept. He had bright eyes and a healthy colour in his cheeks, and though his face was lined, it wasn't from worry. He sat still by the fire and waited patiently for his meal, but with the effects of the warmth from the fire and the long journey, Mr. Lorry dropped off to sleep. The noise of his breakfast arriving woke him, and he said to the waiter, "Please get a room ready for a young lady. She could arrive at any time today. She might ask for Mr. Jarvis Lorry. She might ask for a gentleman from Tellson's Bank. Please let me know when she gets here." Late in the evening, while Mr. Lorry was finishing his dinner, he heard the sound of wheels on the road outside. The sound stopped at the hotel. "This is the young lady," he said to himself. Sure enough, the waiter came to tell him that Miss Manette had arrived from London and wanted to see the gentleman from Tellson's Bank as soon as possible. Miss Manette was still wearing her travelling coat and holding her hat when Mr. Lorry went into her sitting room. She was a pretty young lady, about 17 years old and with blonde hair and blue eyes. For a tiny moment, he thought she looked like the child that he had once held in his arms, protecting her from the wind and rain while crossing the Channel from France. Then the thought disappeared from his mind, and he kissed her hand. "Please, sit down," she said. Her voice was clear and pleasant, and you could only just tell that she was French, not English. "I received a letter saying something about a discovery about my poor father, my long-dead father, who I never saw. The letter mentioned going to Paris, but as I am alone in the world, I asked if I could go with a gentleman from Tellson's to protect me and help me."
"Myself, miss."
"Yes. So they sent a message to you to ask if you would be kind enough to wait for me. They said you would tell me some news, and that some of it might be surprising to me. What news have you got for me? I'm very interested to know."
"It is difficult to know where to begin. I am a man of business, and my story concerns one of our customers in France. It was 20 years ago, and he was a French gentleman and a doctor, like your father. Also, like your father, he was from Beauvais and was well respected in Paris. At that time, I was working in our French bank, and I had been working there for many years. The doctor married an English lady, and...
But this is my father's story, sir. Do I know you? I'm beginning to think I do. My mother only lived a few years after my father died. Was it you who brought me to England? I'm almost sure it was. Please tell me.
Yes, it was me. And Tellson's Bank have been looking after you ever since. But this isn't the whole of my story. What if your father, Dr. Manette, didn't die when you think he did? What if he had just disappeared? What if he had been taken away? Perhaps no one knew where to, although it would have been easy to guess. What if his wife had asked and asked and asked for help to find him? If she had asked everyone possible, even the king and queen, but no one told her? In that case, my story wouldn't be your father's story, but the story of my doctor from Beauvais.
Please tell me more. I'm a little afraid, but I have to know the truth.
Good. You're a brave young lady, and you need to be. I'll go on. His wife had a baby. Yes, a girl. Then, 2 years later, his wife died. I believe broken-hearted after never stopping to search for him. However, she hadn't wanted her child to suffer as she had suffered, so she let the girl believe both parents were dead. Now, this story does become your father's story, and I have to tell you that he has been found. He has another name, but he's alive. He has been in prison all these years, not dead as you were told. He has changed a lot, and he's no longer the man he once was. But, Miss Manette, the truth is, he really is alive.
He has been taken to the house of an old servant in Paris, and we're going to go there to see him.
This is a secret mission, miss. We mustn't let anyone know his true identity, or he will be in terrible danger. My job is to identify him, if I can, and yours is to look after him and bring him back to health. Miss Manette's face went white. She gripped Mr. Lorry's hand and began to faint.
I'm going to see his ghost, not him. His ghost!
Mr. Lorry called for help, and immediately a large, wild-looking woman ran into the room and pushed him back against the wall. She was very red in the face and had a strange hat on her head. Mr. Lorry wasn't even sure if she was a woman or a man. She was so strong.
What have you done, you in brown? Couldn't you tell her what you had to without frightening her to death? Do you call that being a banker?
Mr. Lorry was confused and didn't really know how to answer. But then, shouting at the servants, the wild woman went on.
Don't just stand there, you lazy lot. Go and fetch some water for my young lady.
Despite his confusion, Mr. Lorry was impressed by the woman's care and attention for Miss Manette. I very much hope you'll be coming to France with Miss Manette, madam, he said.
If nature had intended me to go across salt water, do you think I would have been born on an island?
Mr. Lorry thought about this for a moment, and, not really knowing how to answer this question either, he decided it would be better to leave. He left the room, still thinking about it.